slices.
I'd like to call this meeting to order. Would you all rise, please, and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I don't think it is.
Carol, will you call roll, please?
President Graves?
Here.
Vice President Dawson?
Present.
Director Simon?
Here.
Director Steele?
Here.
Director Tatro?
He's not here.
Okay, thank you. This is the time for public comments. I would invite anybody in the audience that has something to talk about that's not on the agenda this evening to please step forward and come to the microphone and say your what's on your mind. Okay, then. Hearing none, public comments is closed. Tonight, I believe we have somebody here from the county code enforcement.
That would be Patty Cookson.
Patty, if you're going to do a presentation, can I suggest that you use that over there so that way you kind of get the audience and the board?
Is that my phone?
It's actually not a presentation.
Okay.
So.
A report? A question?
Comments.
Well, go ahead. It's all yours. Floor is yours.
Good evening. Thank you for having me once again. I just wanted to let the Town of Discovery Bay know that you guys are doing a wonderful job keeping your community up. And I sincerely mean that because it's not just code enforcement, it's not just the sheriff's department, it's not just fire or just not just one entity, but it's the whole town working together as well as individuals. I get a lot of calls about some neighbor's weeds or a vacant home, and a lot of your community members are taking the initiative to go ahead and mow the lawn across the street or next door. And it's because, you know, everybody wants to keep Discovery Bay up and their property values as well. So your community, as opposed to a lot of other communities throughout the county, are working together, and it shows. It really shows. And so what I wanted to do tonight is ask all of you to encourage the individuals of the community with any complaints to please fill out a complaint form, send it to code enforcement, because I don't live in your community. I don't know where all the dust bunnies are, and I can't be everywhere. You guys are. You're driving up and down streets that I'm not typically, or I may be busy on the other side of town doing something. If there is a vehicle that is up on Four Jacks, I want to know about it. I want to be over there taking care of that instead of weeds that are 17 inches high or someone's front yard that's a little, you know, unkept. So there are some priorities. But I do want you guys to get word out. Also, the community bulletin. I know that there have been people working with getting that word out. In the newspaper, any bulletins, and then I brought some more of them as far as with the boats, RVs, as well as boat trailers. There are a lot of those out there. There's a lot of area. It's extremely time consuming. And there again, the boats that have the tongue sticking out on the sidewalk, making everybody walk into the street. So, you know, please fill out a form, call, and report it. You know, don't keep driving by, but pick up the phone and call, okay? And so we can take care of it.
Can I ask you a question on that matter? For vehicles that are on private property, not on the street, that's where you come into play, correct? You don't get involved in it if an RV's been parked on the street for too long, if there's a boat trailer that's left out on the street. Do you get involved in that also?
No.
Okay, that's the sheriff's.
Yes.
Okay.
And there again, not just boats and RVs, but we also have the abandoned vehicle program, which is if I'm driving down the street and I see a vehicle that looks as though it's not operable, then I'll tag it. And it's up to the property owner or the vehicle owner to call and say, hey, it works. I just have to put some air in the tires. You know, give me a chance to go ahead and charge the battery. And then I go out and make sure that that vehicle is operable. They'll drive it up and down the street. It doesn't have to be registered, it doesn't have to be licensed with our program, but we don't want vehicles sitting around looking like they don't run. And there again, you may pass one every single day, you know, that I don't. So I need you to report those. And that would be on public, I'm sorry, that's on private property only that we do the vehicles. And so anything on private property would be code enforcement. Anything public street would be the sheriff's department.
If we wanted clarification on what the code was with regards to, because I think there's probably some, at least there is with me, some confusion with regards to what is considered to be CC&Rs of the HOA, and then what is code enforcement from the county. So what's the website we can go to find out exactly, rather than have you here sit here and recite it to us? Maybe if we could just get that on the record of what the website is to go to check whether or not they're in violation to where they would call you, or in violation where they would need to get a hold of the very effective DBPOA and have them take care of it.
That website is contracosta.ca.gov.
And is there a particular drop-down menu we go to or something?
It is. It's going to be code enforcement.
Okay. It's right there on the front page?
It is.
Okay, great.
And it is going to be under ABAP.
Because I think there's some crossover there that's not, that you can't do anything about, and some that you can't. It'd be good for clarification purposes anyway.
Right. With the vehicles, if they're operable, we don't care what they look like as long as they run.
How about boat trailers and RVs though?
Those are not allowed to be in the driveway. They need to be screened by at least 90% from public view.
Okay, that was I wasn't sure if that was you or not. Okay.
Yes.
And so my understanding was that any trailer or RV can't protrude any further than the side of the house. The
face of the house.
I'm not sure.
But the
line of the house. You know, it has to be behind
90%.
Okay.
Well, what it is
you said, she said screen, not
right,
just behind.
Right. There is some confusion because I think some of the CC&Rs are less restrictive than the county ordinance. And so when the county comes along and says, well, according to our ordinance, you can have a boat, an RV, trailer, whatever, as long as it's capable of being screened by 90% from public view.
Got it.
So.
Thank you for
you're
that
welcome.
Clarification.
Are you
done? Are you complete?
I'm
open for questions?
Yes.
Board, do you have any questions for us?
No, I think you covered all 700 of them.
Yeah.
Right.
700.
I was going to say, maybe we can put the link on the website?
Certainly.
If we don't already have it on there?
Well, we already have the Contra Costa County website link on there, and we've also posted the notice on the boat trailers and mm-hmm. basketball hoops. I think Patty has
which
those.
Like,
we,
really
we've also posted that on our website as well.
Do we have capability for pop-ups on that thing yet, or is that something that we're supposed to take care of in the future? Don't have to go into detail, I understand. Do the answer is yes or no? The answer is no.
The answer is yes or no. The answer is yes and no, just not yet.
Not yet, okay. Because this, going into summer, it's going to become more of an issue with RVs, people coming over, it's going to, how many hours they can sit on the street. And I know there's signs out here that say what they are, but I've been told, before I was on the board, I tried to have those rules enforced, and I was told that we're not enforcing them in town. I mean, if we have a sign that says you can't park a trailer for more than, well, how many hours is it? 72 hours? Then that's it.
That, again, would fall under the sheriff's
right.
Jurisdiction.
Right. There I go.
And one more. Rick, who from the board is the on the committee for code enforcement?
The designated member of the board would be Director Tetro, but due to a scheduling conflict on the days that the code enforcement group meets, I have been substituting in and I've been attending those meetings when they take place.
Can we, should I bring it up during future agenda items? Okay, I'll bring that up.
Any questions directly?
Patty.
Chris, do you have any?
No.
Any from the public? Any clarifications, questions or clarifications from the public?
Well,
Well, thank you very much for coming out here. We appreciate it very much.
Thank you, guys. You've done a great job, and I'll do my very best. I'm going to leave some of the complaint forms as well as the community bulletins at the back with my business cards if you need anything, okay?
Thank you very much. Okay, area agency reports.
W. Spalding.
Spalding, that's right. I always want to think of Caddyshack when I see you. Deputy Spalding, how are you, man? Good to see you.
Very good. Lieutenant Burton apologizes he's sick and was unable to make it. And Specialist Anthony Fontenot's mother passed away. He's definitely out of town while he deals with that. So I'm here to give you what I can. Lieutenant Burton, I'd like to let you guys know that the robbery strong arm string that we had with the pizza guy and all that, all those suspects pled guilty and have been adjudicated out. And
case closed, I guess,
case
more or less.
Pretty much closed on all those people. They were all caught and they've all taken plea deals and they'll be fighting.
Do you know what the oldest, without any of my, what was the oldest guy that was involved in that? Okay, good. It wasn't 21, 23, 25 year olds.
No, if they were that old, we could have told you they were.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Questions? Mark?
Yes, speaking of code enforcement, if you go out the parking lot where the yacht club is, there's a motorhome that sits out in the street. It's an old, decrepit, I think they're living in it. It's farther than it. It was actually right across from the bar and grill from Boardwalk. If you walk straight out Boardwalk's front door, out
in
the
parking lot or on the street?
On the street. It's there all the time. It's a big, old, crusty looking.
Yeah, they move between there and the parking lot.
Yeah, that's the one.
So they move it every so often.
I was curious if the guy's living in it. It showed up there again the other night.
I haven't talked to him yet, but they move it just enough to not get in trouble. Which for the moving thing is 72 hours.
Okay.
There are signs posted when you enter Discovery Bay quoting a Board of Supervisors order or something that states you can't park more than 3 hours. But as President Gray says, we don't enforce that. We're kind of in limbo as to what it actually is and where it came from.
Oh, whether that's legit or not?
When I first came out here a few years ago, we know it was legit at some point, but there was some case law at some point about discriminating against vehicles. So it was kind of put off, but it may be something that you guys can write to the supervisor's office about, because I think it's the board. I think at some point she might be able to pull up the actual order or whatever it is for future enforcement.
Okay, so we need to do a little homework. Do you have something, Chris? Yeah, go ahead.
When I drive down Bixler Road, there's a on the west side of Bixler between Timber Point and Balfour, there's a steel building, a farm building, and it's tagged excessively. It's been tagged many times, and I'm just surprised that the tagging's still there, and it probably was a code enforcement issue, but it would be nice to see that vandalism go away or at least have it covered up. It looks like it's kind of perpetuating the stereotype and some of the symbols on it. So.
Yeah, it's on private property, so it'd be more of a patty issue.
Okay.
And it's not technically within Discovery Bay, so it's on that side of Bixler, so right. It's not something that I focus on regularly, but if things are brought up to us, we will poach, if you will, outside the area, because it's so close. It's kind of like going to Orwood. It's so close.
Yeah.
We use it, so.
I'll bring it up with Tony.
You don't have any, like, reports to give us or anything?
Tony does all the printouts, and he unexpectedly has it in town.
Just make something up.
If you can ask about certain things, I could probably, off the top of my head, give you rough numbers.
Prime up or down?
It's kind of steady right now. It was up in May and April on burglaries. Then it kind of tapered off, but it seems to be summertime. It's going to start picking up a little bit again. Residential burglaries are still happening during the daytime. Five, if you will. Normally, we've been getting pretty good at people giving us seeing something, but still, we're still trying to convince people when you see something that you're looking at, and it's enough for you to look at it, call us, because we'll come out, we'll see what's going on. But people still are hesitant to call the sheriff's office. They don't want to bug us, but we'd rather be bugged and find out it's nothing than come up later and neighbor's house got broken into. It's kind of a vague feeling.
Brian, you have something?
Yeah, are you still working with the officer from Oakley with the LIDAR?
He will be Ted Burton actually talked to me last night. He's actually going to bring him back out again this month for a few hours to work some speed around town. If there's a particular area that you think is better than others, it should be, you know, or Ted Burton, you know, we can let him know. So when he's out here, he can go work those specific areas.
We'd like him to work Brentwood, please.
Yeah,
I think we want to know where they're going to be.
Yeah, can you give us the exact time?
Yeah, we'd like to submit that schedule to the board, please. And we will publish it on the website, and deterrent is a good thing. Any questions from the public? I'm sorry, Chris.
Has Marine Patrol started, and how's that going? Do you know?
I'm sorry, Marine Patrol?
Yeah.
They were out in force over Memorial Day weekend, which unfortunately was a really bad weather weekend, so it backfired on them. Their staffing is normal what it is. They are out and about. We have the alcohol breath machine at the Discovery the Annex for the summer to minimize their out-of-service time. Wow. So that they're able to get in and out, because obviously they focus a lot on the podium and trying to prevent accidents before they happen.
Yeah.
That was the other question I was going to ask. How much drunk driving over the weekend?
That I know of was just one or two, but Highway Patrol handles that primarily.
So they give the report after his, so you can ask that guy.
Oh yeah, the guy that just showed up in 9 months.
Well, I was wondering who was coming tonight. Yeah, they normally do it. We'll rest quite a few between me and Deputy Hamlin because we're out here. But it's actually a little bit better right now, but as the summer picks up, obviously the boaters and all that stuff, it does pick up. People need to remember that when you're drinking on the water, you may not realize it because you're not walking around all day, and then you jump in your car to pull your boat home, that the alcohol will take effect and cause bad things.
Any questions from the public for Deputy Spaulding? Okay. Well, thank you for coming out. Give our best to Anthony, our condolences, and tell Mike to get better.
Oh, yes.
Thank you. Chief, code enforcement, is anybody here from code enforcement? Is our, your Chris's nephew or uncle or Dwayne Steele
here?
Are you
talking about transplant?
Yeah. Oh, that's transplant, okay. Can we hear from...
No relation.
Oh, I'm in the wrong place anyway. Chief Burris, come on up. I jumped down a paragraph.
See, I think
I'm
a very efficient
chief. Yeah, I like that. That was good.
How are you doing this evening?
Good.
Good to see you in uniform.
Welcome back. Make sure I ran enough those.
Wow. Hello, I'm County Chief Burris. I represent East Contra Costa Fire Protection District, the old local fire district. Because you live in unincorporated East Contra Costa County, you have a fire district which is an umbrella of protection. No one fire station is a standalone entity. If you have a structure fire like you had in May, you'll have fire engines come as far away from Oakley to fight that fire and Antioch. Conversely, if Brentwood gets a fire, your fire engine very well could be going to Brentwood. So if you have some kind of emergency, it's really important that you dial 911 and not just get in your car and drive down to the fire station, because they might be out training or on another call. But that being said, we had 54 medical calls in the month of May, 5 structure fires. One of those structure fires on Foghorn, our engine companies performed a rescue of a victim inside the house, saving that victim. The victim will have a positive outcome and will return as a healthy individual.
Can I ask a question about that, Chief?
Yes.
Chief Henderson called me that evening.
Yeah.
They were life-flighted up to Davis. It didn't appear to be any burns that could be seen, but there was some smoking. What exactly?
Basically, if there's soot around the nares and the mouth, they've obviously ingested some kind of superheated gas. It's the toxic level of that smoke that kills. It's also the superheated gases. She did ingest something.
Okay.
Obviously, she became disoriented, tried to hide it in the closet and cover herself up with laundry of some kind. So our crews did an excellent job of finding this person and pulling them from the clutches of fire. I don't want to be too dramatic, but in these economically trying times, I just want everybody to understand that your fire department goes above and beyond to serve the public. That's my little... let's see.
And we appreciate that.
There were 4 vegetation fires in May, 2 auto accidents, 2 fire alarms, 1 public service call, and 1 smoke investigation. Total calls from April to May, there were 41 in April and 69 in May. So as we swing up towards summertime, we will get busier. Just so you know, if you use some kind of linseed oil or teak oil on your deck, and when you're done with those rags, don't ball those rags up and put them in a paper bag in the garbage. You will light your garbage can on fire, and every year we have a couple fires like that. Also, as the grass starts to get dry and you're out there with your lawnmower, if you're mowing or abating some kind of vegetation and your lawnmower strikes a rock, it will cause a spark, and as we get on towards summer, we get a lot of fires that way. What starts as a vegetation fire or an exterior fire then attacks the house.
Understood. Do you know off the top of your head the fire on Foghorn and the rescue? Do we know the response time much of that fire?
No, I don't.
Do we know whether we were the engine company that was the first on scene? Discovery Bay?
Yes, your Discovery Bay engine was the first on scene.
So it was, I think, I told you that night when I called you, I think it was 6 minutes and 45 seconds till they got set up from when the call went in. And then the circumstances that, as I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong now, because this came the night of, you didn't know immediately that the house was occupied, and one of the neighbors said, I think somebody's there, and you guys just attacked the house and found the person hiding, is that correct?
Well, our engine companies, if your home is on fire, they do a primary search, which is a very quick search, searching obvious areas for a body, behind the door, the bed, under the bed. But as the fire progresses and we try and make a determination if someone is home, it was at that point that the first person on scene told our engine companies that no one was home. It wasn't until somebody else on scene said, no, I just talked to her 15 minutes ago, her car is there. So we kind of shift from a defensive fire attack to an offensive fire attack in the aspect of actually trying to find and save the homeowner. We kind of use a safety motto, risk a little to save a little, as in we're not going to risk our lives to just save an abandoned building, versus risk a lot to save a lot, where we're going to go above and beyond and risk our own personal safety, and when I say us, our flying personnel, to save a life of a citizen.
Thank you for that clarification. Do you have more for us, or is it time for questions?
Yeah, questions. I'm here for you.
Chris, anything? Brian? Mark? Any questions from the public for Chief Burris at this point? Okay, well, it's good to see you again.
Thank you.
And we'll see you next Monday.
Yeah.
Next Monday.
Monday.
Yeah, it's fire.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm back in the right paragraph now. Do we have our representative from the ECC FPD here tonight? No, no, no. We have a representative on the ECC FPD now. I can't remember his name.
Person,
German guy.
I spoke to Chief Henderson today about this, and he will start attending our meetings. The gentleman will, yes.
Okay.
He's not here this evening.
Okay, very good. Moving along, then. I'm sorry. I received an email an hour or so ago from Supervisor Pico's office, and unfortunately Karen Cornell couldn't be here this evening. She planned to be, and she wasn't able to make it, and she sends her apologies. She invites anybody out there that has any questions for the supervisor to contact their office. Two things that she wanted me to bring up. One is that there will be continued delays on Vasco Road as they start trucking in some dirt and some other things, and the delays are getting a little longer. And secondly, on June 18th in Discovery Bay, there is going to be a household hazardous waste event taking place. I saw that, Mike. So if anybody's listening to this out there, this is the time to get rid of your junk.
It will take place at the school next week.
It's usually in the Discovery Bay Elementary School parking lot. It doesn't say e-waste. It must be my washer dryers. Is it e-waste?
Everything.
Okay, very good.
Whole garage?
Yeah. Moving to the next committee reports. This is where I thought I was before. Transplan. County Planning Commission. Code enforcement we heard from. And there is no special district. So, we would like to move on to the consent calendar.
I will make the motion.
I need to pull an item from the consent calendar. We're going to pull item F4. Are we going to move that anywhere else onto the agenda or just pull for the time being?
We're going to pull for the time being some documents we are anticipating arriving.
Understood.
Did not have them on time.
Thank you. So,
I will make the motion that excluding item F4, we approve the consent calendar as it stands.
I'll second that.
Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Pull that to four. Okay, we're on to new business and action items. Item one is a presentation of our proposed wastewater rates for the fiscal year. I imagine this is where we're going to hear from Mr. Hornberger, is that correct?
That's correct.
Hey, Gary, how you doing?
Good to see you again.
Gary Hornberger of Hornberger Engineering is here this evening, and he's going to be discussing the proposed rates for the coming two fiscal years beginning on July 1 of this year, and the second year beginning on July 1 of 2012 through June 30 of 2013. I think probably the best thing to do is let Gary get into his presentation, and then we can go ahead and ask any questions.
Very good. Gary, I would encourage you to use the microphone because these are recorded and put onto the website.
Absolutely.
For people to hear.
My pleasure. This is the best place to stand?
Yes, that'd be great. Thank you. Safe. Perfect. Thanks. Thank you very much for doing that, by the way.
My pleasure.
And for the members of the public, there is a copy of the PowerPoint presentation at the back of the room. So if you didn't pick it up, please do so.
Thank you very much. I appreciate coming back again here this year. Thank you for having me. My name is Gary Hornberger. I'm with Hornberger Engineering. I've been the district and town's revenue consultant for a number of years now. What I'd like to do tonight is to give you an overview of the proposed water and wastewater rates for the next two coming fiscal years. Before I do that, let me tell you what the goals of this rate development process are. First of all, the goal is to fund 2 years of revenues. Those include your operating expenses, capital improvements, and replacement funding. And in funding those costs have to be recovered in proportion to each user's use of the system. That's a Proposition 218 requirement. It requires a fee rate calculation, which looks something like this. So we got a few zillion calculations here to come up with that. As a result of doing that calculation, what is developed is an updated rate structure for the water and the wastewater rates that recovers the cost in proportion to each customer's use of the system. So the first thing I'd like to talk about is the revenue requirements, and first of all is operating expenses. Now those are the operating expenses for the current year and for the next two fiscal years. The bottom is your contract operator, Veolia, and then it's sewer and then water on the top. In 2010-11, the operating expenses were $3.7 million. That's about $1.2 million from the contract operator. In 2011 and 12, they've gone up to about $4 million. That's a $341,000 increase, about 9.2%. The biggest portion of that is for general repairs. That $341,000 is a $150,000 increase for general repairs. Second largest item is $80,000 additional for power. Third largest item is $50,000 for staff costs. Then there are $35,000 for Camp Falls and $27,000 for the Preventive Corrective Fund, and another $24,000. So that makes up the total $341,000. For the fiscal year 2012-13, it's up about for a general inflationary amount, it's about 3% approximately. So that's an additional $130,000. So that's the biggest portion of your revenue department is operating expenses. The next item is capital improvement costs, and I'm going to break this down for water and sewer so that there's a lot of projects. So this is the proposed water capital improvement program and replacement funds. The biggest ticket item is biggest project is the new well number 7. That's $615,000 over the 2-year period. Second largest item is the rehabilitation of the wells for $60,000. Wellhead transducers and survey, that's $36,000. Water meter trailer for $20,000. And then other projects over the 2 years total about $109,000. So the 2-year program on the water side are $840,000 in projects. Then in addition to that, this year, your town is instituting infrastructure replacement funding. And this includes replacement funding. There's 3 of those different funds that are appropriate for the water system: pumps and motors, water facilities, including mains, and facilities and vehicles replacements. And those costs are going, they're $158,000 in the coming year, and they're going up to $180,000 the following year. Total replacement funding on those 3 funds totals $338,000. Now, let me flip to the sewer side for some bigger numbers. The biggest item on the sewer agenda for projects are the 2 solar dryers and belt presses. That combined over the 2 years is about a $1.6 million program. Second item is a reactivate pump station W, $378,000 over the 2 years. And some influent pump station modifications in 12-13 for $90,000. There's a carport for $110,000. Salinity projects for $70,000. And then there's another 2 items, other projects over the 2 years total $392,000. So what you're looking at in projects over the 2 years is $264,000. That's good, $2.64 million.
Because they sold.
Sold, you want it. $2.64 million. And again, there are 3 infrastructure replacement funds that are associated with the sewer side. Again, pumps and motors, sewer facilities, and then the facilities and replacement costs. And those total around $200,000 per year. But what I'd like to do at this point is...
Can I interrupt here for a minute? Pump station W, where's pump station W?
Plant number 1.
Plant 1.
It currently isn't working?
It used to be all the raw sewage came into W.
Where are you hiding?
I'm hiding right over
here. Hi, Brian. I thought you'd left. I couldn't find you. Go ahead.
So anyway, it used to be the main, what they call the influent pump station.
Okay.
Before we built plant number 2, we disconnected it, and then we went to the state, the sludge lagoon at plant number 1. We wanted to use that as an emergency. Originally, the state didn't want us to. They did now come back to us, said, yes, you can use that as an emergency detour of your wastewater. In order for us to do that, we have to activate lift station W to pump it there and then pump it back out.
The W is by reactivating W, there's other related facility upgrades that are part of that as well.
That are built into this cost as well, obviously in year 2.
Built into other parts.
What are we using? What are we using?
We have no emergency storage facility.
Okay, thank you. I'm sorry. I just wanted it to make sense. Go ahead.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Virgil.
Well, what I'd like to do is just give you a comparison of the CIP and replacement funding that's in the current rates this year and what they would be under the proposed rates for the next 2 years. As you can see, under the current rates, total CIP and replacements are about a little over $1 million. They would increase to $1.8 million next year and then increase again to $2.46 million in the following year. So, having presented the operation and maintenance costs, CIP and replacement funding, I'd like to present the total revenue requirements. Now, this is for both systems, water and sewer combined. Under the current rates, It would generate $4,793,000 per year, which would mean that for the next 2 years, you would have revenues of $9.59 million. If you add up the operation costs and the capital costs, the revenue need over the 2 years is $12.46 million. So you have a revenue deficiency of $2.87 million. So that's why you need rate increases to make up that $2.87 million. That would require increases, overall increases, water and sewer combined, 22.0% next year and 13.6% in the following year. So what I'd like to do at this point, showing your overall revenue needs, is break that down to the development of the water rates and then the sewer rates. So just your water revenue requirements, $1.7 million in water revenues, that's going to give you $3.43 million. You need $4.97 million. That's a deficiency of $1.54 million. That requires rate increases to generate the $1.54 million. And I just want to go back to operating expenses, how those are broken down between water and sewer. Operating expenses for water are about 46% of the total operating expenses. Sewer about 54%. Most of the operating expenses are allocated 40% to water, 60% to sewer. However, some things are different, like electrical costs are calculated in the bill. So to fund that revenue requirement in 2011-12, you need an increase of 27.4% in your water rates. In 2012-13, you need an increase of 27.8%. There's a little tiny line in there. Some of the funding would come from miscellaneous revenues, about $18,000 for miscellaneous revenue. And what that is that's the rental on your cell tower here, the interest income, a few other minor items. I'm sorry.
You noticed I look confused?
Yes.
My furrowed brow?
I saw your furrowed brow, sir.
Okay, on the total revenue requirements, You told us that it was 22% in year one, 11-12, and 13 point something in year two, 12-13, correct?
That's correct, sir.
Okay, but now you're breaking, that was for both?
That was for both, yes.
Okay, but now you're just giving it to us as a breakdown after you give us the total number, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct, sir.
So water's requiring 27 and 28, basically?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And then make sure I understand.
Okay. Yeah, and I'll give you a sewer.
Oh,
a little bit
right, okay.
Yeah. The combination of the two is 22.
And you're breaking it out because the revenue is from different sources. Water is a combined metered and tax, whereas sewer is just in tax rolls, correct?
Well, I'm breaking it down because you have two different systems here.
Okay, go ahead.
And they are, you do generate, depending on how it's built, basically
sure.
You have two separate systems and they need to develop the rates
okay. For
both of them. So, anyway, what that will require, as I mentioned, those are the overall rate increases for the water system that will be required. Now, the next step, given that that's the overall revenues, is develop the actual rates. Again, rates have to be in proportion to a customer's uses of the system. So, the first thing is to establish what the water usage is. As you know, you have currently, we're going to give you two options. Because we're going to give you an option for an additional category. Right now, for your autometer customers, you have three tiers of rates, and it's based on parcel size. You have unmetered under 5,000 square feet. That is about 9% of your customers. You have unmetered 5 to 10,000 square feet. That's about 82% of your customers. So most all of your customers in the 5 to 10,000 square foot. Then you have unmetered in 10,000 to 15,000 square feet. That's about another 9% of your customers. And then we have an additional tier. If you're over 15,000 square feet, you're charged for additional water based on each 1,000 square feet. So those are for your unmetered residential customers. That's about 3,512 customers in that category. And those are the, under option one, those are the assigned water uses for those particular categories. And that is based on analysis of your 2010 water production. So we've gone and revised that from what it was last year, and actually it's come down a little bit. Last year in the unmetered 10,000 category, it was 25 CCF a month. Now it's 23. So you're seeing a reduction, you know, significant reduction in water usage. As far as your meter customers, we're also seeing a reduction in water usage. Last year was the average was about 19.2. Now it's about 18 a CCF per year. And there's about 1,880 meter customers right now in the first eight phases. Now that's the way the current structure is. Option number one. There was consideration from last year and to provide another. I was asked to provide another option, and that is for the condos and multifamily customers where irrigation is provided by the homeowners association. That is, they don't have their own irrigation. All they have is inside water. So as an option number two, the very top up there, there's 174 multifamily condo customers who would potentially be in that category. And what we would assign to them is 9.75 CCF per month. And what that is that's the wastewater usage that we're going to assign to those customers. So what we're saying is the water in equals the wastewater out for those particular customers. So I'm going to develop two sets of rates based on either option one or option two for your consideration. The next item, having given the usage and the cost, is to develop unit cost for the water system. Now, I'm only going to present this for 2011-12, but they follow quite similarly for 2012 and 13. There are four types of unit costs that the water customers pay. First type of cost is usage. Now, what was recovered in the usage cost is 80% of the operating costs and of your capital costs. And all the customers pay for usage based on the volume of wastewater they use. So we've taken the total dollars assigned to usage divided by the total billable volume of water. And in 2011-12, for that first option, it's $1.09. If we used option two, there's a little less billable volume, so it goes up a penny, so it's $1.10. Now, that rate applies to all of your customers. Everybody pays that. Whether they're metered, they're unmetered, everybody pays that. The second type of the unit cost is fire protection costs. Now, fire protection costs are the other 20% of your operating costs and your capital costs. And the reason it's 20% is because the American Water Works Association has graphs that indicate that for a system of your size, about 20% of the costs in the system are devoted to fire protection. That is, because you not only do provide water, you also provide fire protection services. So that other 20% are allocated equally to all the customers, except for the irrigation customers, on a flat rate basis. That is, we take the total fire protection dollars, divided by the total number of accounts, that's $4.75 per month for fire protection. So everybody pays that, except for the irrigation customers, because of course they have no need for fire protection.
Large water users, commercial, pay the same rate as residential?
For fire protection?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, everybody pays for the same.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Then there's a third unit cost, and third and fourth unit cost, it only applies to metered customers. That's metered billing would be the next one, and that applies, that is the cost for establishing the water consumption and sending it out and billing it. So that's allocated only to the metered customers. It's $1.58 a month. Then the last item is meter maintenance, and that is cost for taking care of the meters. That is based on the meter size, or the unit cost for a 1-inch meter is $1.04 per month. It varies, goes to up for the larger size customer. For a four-inch meter, it'd be $10.35. So those are the unit costs for 11-12 that are built into the rates. And there are the proposed water rates for 2011 and 12. And these are based on those unit costs. Now, let me talk about first about the top line there, which is the unmetered monthly rates. All the customers in that are paying $1.09 for their usage, times the established usage for the different classifications. And they're paying the $4.75 for fire protection. So that's how those rates are developed. So you can see that the main the rate that most of the customers pay, the $5,000 to $10,000, it's gone from $2,377 to $2,990 under option one. Under option two, they all pay that $1.10 instead of $1.09, so that would go up to $30.15. As far as the metered rates, at the bottom of that chart there, I'll start with the residential customers. Right now, they pay $5.74 plus 80.3 cents, 100 cubic feet. That amount would be going up to $7.37 and $1.09 under the option one, or $1.10 under option two. And what goes into that account charge is three items. It's the fire protection card charge that everybody pays, it's the meter billing charge, and meter maintenance charge. So you add those three items together from those unit costs on the prior case, fire page, and you get $7.37. For the non-residential customers, they pay the same thing, except that their meter maintenance charge varies quite a bit depending on the size of their meter. So they're also paying fire protection billing and meter maintenance costs, and it goes from $7.07 to $21.86. Irrigation, similar. The only thing about irrigation is they don't pay fire protection. So we take the $4.75 out of that, but they do pay for meters, meter maintenance and meter billing. So those would be the proposed water rates for 2011-12. The 12-13 rates be calculated in a very similar manner, and I would want to go through all that with you.
So how much a year for 5 to 10,000 square foot, dollars, not percentage, dollars, how much is the increase?
For
the 5 to 10,000, without me having to do the math.
Water and sewer.
Water and sewer, 177, I'm getting to that.
Okay.
That's right near the end. The answer is $177.
Okay.
From current year to next year.
Okay.
Or $14.77.
Okay.
Having completed the water rates, I'd like to go into sewer rates. We don't have any options in that, so that makes it a little bit easier. These are the sewer revenue requirements for the next 2 years. As you can see right now, it's $3.1 million in revenue, which is $6.15 million you would collect if you didn't change the rates. You need $7.49 million, and so that's $1.4 million of revenue deficiency that has to be made up through the increasing the rates. And those are the rate increases required for the sewer rates. 18.9% next year, and 5.1% in the following year. And again, that little tiny sliver at the box at the top is revenues get from the miscellaneous revenues. It's $28,000 per year assigned to the sewer rates. So let me go into the development of sewer rates. Again, it has to be in proportional to use. And this hasn't changed from last year. We did do a look looked at the influent records of the treatment plant and the assigned usages for the customers remain the same. There's no significant change. So multiple family condos would be billed for sewer usage
kind of stuff
at $9.75. $9.75 CCF per month. Okay, that is under the option two for water. That's where that came from. That's how we got 975. So that's sewer usage from the condo. And single families would bill for 13 CCF per month. Now, the interesting thing about wastewater, what makes it kind of fun, is that there are...
Tell me, what makes wastewater fun?
You know, let me tell you. You know, it just makes my life interesting because they get to bill people for how much pollutants they have in the wastewater. And that's why everybody's paying different rates per 100 cubic feet. The typical residential customer, and there are two types of pollutants, let me back up. There's biochemical oxygen demand, and that's called BOD up there. What that is that's a measure of organics in the wastewater. And then there's also suspended solids. That's a solid just floating around in the wastewater. And that's what your treatment plant does. It takes those out. So we have to charge people depending on how much pollutants they put down the pipe. They're measured by strength, that's milligrams per liter. Residential wastewater is, we're billing for 175 in BOD, 200 for suspended solids. That's just, these are all kind of relative numbers. Businesses, and in fact, all those numbers come from, with the exception of residential, the state publishes those strength values, so that's what they're based on.
Okay.
So the businesses, government, clubs, and so on. It's a little bit less, 150 milligrams a liter each. Restaurants and bars and dining, that's where the fun comes. Because there's a lot of restaurants where I can't eat in where after I work getting done working here, because we charge them for 1,000 milligrams per liter of BOD and 600 milligrams per liter for suspended solids. What that means is the restaurant has 5 times the organics in it in its wastewater and 3 times the suspended solids as does your home. So we recognize that in the rates. Schools are very low. There you can see 130 and 100. So those pollutant strengths are built into the wastewater rates, and these would be your proposed wastewater rates. I was able to put 2 years up on there for 11-12 and 12-13. On the top box up there, this is the residential rates, and you can see the residential usage rate, that top line up there right now, it's $3.41 per 100 cubic feet. It will go up to $4.08 in the next year, and then $4.29 in the following year. And the way those rates underneath there are developed is simply those usage rates times 9.75 for the multiple family condos, or 13 CCF per month for the single family customers. So what that means is the multiple family customers will be going from 33.29 currently to 39.76, and then again to 41.83. Single family, 44.38, 53.02, and then going up to 55.78. Now for the non-residential customers, who are all metered, there's a different rate for each of those classifications. And all those rates are based on the differences are because of the pollutant values and pollutant strengths in their wastewater. So as you can see, the business and government and clubs there, they're $3, they're 308, they're going up to 368, and then up to $3.87. Restaurants are going up significantly from 905 roughly to 1078, and then 1134, and et cetera, and on for the different classifications. So again, that's the reason for the difference why restaurants are paying $10.77, 78 cents, and you as a homeowner or homeowners are paying $4.08 is because of those pollutant strengths.
Question.
Sure.
I'm missing some here. It says under residential classification, residential usage rate 3.414. Mm-hmm. On the bottom it says single family. What's the difference between residential and single family?
Oh, okay. The resident, all the multiple families, single family are both residential. Okay, so to develop the multiple family or the single family rate, we take $3, let's use 2010 level. We take $3.41 per 100 cubic feet times for the multifamily economies, times 9.75, and that gives a rate.
The chart's kind of goofy. You got in one column, you got two different things. One CCF and one per month. I had to look at that. Oh, yeah.
Sorry about that. Sorry for the confusion. But the usage rate, the dollar system.
Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, that's fine. That's dollars per month that are actually that you're billing for. It's just that what I put is the usage rate of that. That's what goes into their billing.
Question.
In that same area, for those people who have metered water, are they going to be charged a metered sewage rate, or would they have the same blanket sewage rate as other residents?
Yeah, they have the same blanket sewage rate. Yes. Yes. To keep the rate simple, and what's most typical in most agencies is there is assigned usage for several different classes of customers. Typically, it's multiple family and single family.
And that doesn't matter how big the families are, how big the homes are, that sort of thing?
It's just two basic classifications. Obviously, you have smaller homes, multiple family. The question becomes, how complex do you want your rates to be? Making rates is always the other fun part of making rates is you can get very, very complicated in this, or you can keep it simple, and it's always a case of adjusting that balance.
Yeah. Sure. Pollutant strengths. I'm curious why residential is higher BOD and suspended solids than a school.
I can't tell you exactly why. I mean, the schools just don't have that much What can I tell you? That's a published number from the state.
You've got hundreds of kids eating and using the restroom.
Yeah, I know, I know.
It's all,
and you got four people in a home using it.
It's not 24.
I mean, they're only there quite.
It's all that kitchen chocolate.
They don't, they don't look at the schools primarily. They have lunches, but they throw everything in the trash cans. Just like with McDonald's here, they don't cook anything other than heat. But they don't wash dishes, so if you don't have the gravies and whatever going down there.
You're on, Gary.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, now the question that you've asked President Graves, how much is this going to cost when we put it all together? This is the option one. These are the rates in dollars per year. As you can see, the single family homeowner, which is the predominant homeowner here, it's for water and sewer, we go from $818 to $995 per year. That is an increase of about $14.77 a month. In the following year, the increase would be an additional $139. That's $11.58 per month. The single family, but basically, they change a little bit depending on how much they use, but basically overall, it's a 22% increase overall. 13.6%. It varies with the different customers depending on what their specific use is. Single family meter customer, who is probably the second most common customer here, we'll see its increase of $186 in 2011-12 and then $122 in 12-13. Now, the second, these are the same number, they're similar numbers, except they're option two. And the thing I want to point out with this is if you look at the very top line, we'll see the multiple family condos with no irrigation use. This is 174 customers who are potentially in that. You'll see their increase is only $39. And that's the reason for that is right now they're paying for the first tier rate. Under this option, they would be reduced down to 9.75. So their water charge is coming under that option would be reduced. Their surcharge goes up. So you combine those together, they only have a $39 increase. The single family customer in the 5 to 10,000, their increase is now $180 instead of $177. That's an increase of about $3 per year. That's additional 0.3%.
So by going to that, it's basically leveling the playing field a little bit because those residents that have no lots and we're paying no exterior water, we're paying both for it in their home rates as well as in their irrigation rates.
They were being charged like all customers.
Right.
Everybody under 5,000 square feet parcel size was being paid the same, regardless of the situation. So the two-year rate program would include an average water rates over 2 years of 27.6% increase, average sewer rate increases over 2 years of 11.8%, total rate increases 22, and then 13.6. averaging over 2 years, 17.7% increase. So before I conclude, though, I'd just take a minute, and I really want to thank your town staff here. I want to thank Rick and Virgil, and Calista, Liz, and Joey, and all the rest of the staff, because they had to do a lot of work to get me these numbers in a very short time, and I really appreciate all their hard work. It's a real pleasure to bring these fine folks here. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Gary, for saying that. We like working with them, too, most of the time.
Thank you very much.
Gary, is there, sure.
Thank you.
Where are you showing the large water users? Commercial?
I'm not really showing them out here.
What is their increase going to be?
Oh, their increase is going to be in about 30% range. Because they're paying mostly, they pay the volume rate for water use.
Because the condos that you're talking about lowering their residential rate,
right?
You're going to be raising their commercial rate.
Well,
they have lots of common area.
There's the difference between the landscaping and the businesses. The landscape.
You're talking about landscaping rates? Yeah. Yes.
What is that increase going to be?
That's a good question. That's around 30% or so, because they pay mostly the volume rate. But that's everybody pays that. They just landscaping uses a lot of water.
You know, the interesting thing we found out as we started to analyze this, Mark, over the last year after this became an issue, is that Rick was kind of giving me some updates on that. And during the winter months, our meters aren't turned at all. So we're paying an inordinate amount. Not that we're being charged unfairly because we're metered now, but I mean, at least on the irrigation side. But there's about 5 months we pay the whole year's worth of irrigation. Am I right, Rick? And then the other 7 months, it's like we almost pay nothing because we're not watering. We turn the meters off, at least at the complex that I'm a part of.
I mean, if you look at the condo complexes that we have, there are several of them. One, like the Harbor Bay, they actually do, even though it's not a lot, they do have shrubs, they do have lawns.
Not as part of the homeowner's responsibility, though.
We looked at each of the homeowners associations in town as part of the study to make sure that we did not have, we wanted to make sure that those homeowners condominium associations that had metered landscaping through their association, yet there was no water being used by the homeowner for additional landscaping, such as over in Marina Circle, over in Leo Circle. There are backyards in some of those.
And front yards.
Yeah. And front yards. And while the association pays some of the common areas, each of those condominium owners or townhomes, they actually can landscape. They actually landscape their yards. There was one, possibly two associations in town that do not have, that the units themselves have absolutely no associated landscaping. And that is for certain the Harbor Bay Association, and it's possible it would stamp it out, but we believe that that's not the case. So there's still a question about that property.
Because of the front lawns?
Well, they have there's the common area over at Sand Bay Isle, but then there's an area between the units that is landscaped as well. And so that area that is landscaped between the units is a responsibility of the homeowner.
Questions from the board for Gary?
Just want to say thanks for the hard work you did on this. It's really easy to understand. I appreciate the PowerPoint. My question, when I'm looking at the sewer rates, the drastic difference between 11-12 and 12-13, is there any way, is that based on what we need to do this year? Is that why
Absolutely.
This year is so much higher than the next?
Absolutely.
Okay. That's what I figured. That's all.
Chris, anything?
I think it's pretty clear. I like the detail in the projects and the background we've been given on this. So the expenses are going up, and it's a tough reality we got to make right now. So I understand this is pretty clear. Thanks,
Brian.
I'm just curious, based on work you do with other districts, water and wastewater districts, how do our rates stack up against the other districts you work with?
I'm glad you asked. I just happened, before I was headed over here, to compare your rates with some of the other AC rates. Now, I'll give you what the typical metered customer in Discovery Bay for water and sewer, under the proposed rates for next year, will be paying $80.07. And I'll go down the line from the lowest to the highest, if I may. And the numbers I'm going to give you are the rates from the other agencies for 2011, 10-11. So I have not had time to update those numbers. Okay. So they'd probably be a little bit higher. But City of Tracy, $61.50. Stockton, $63.33. Manteca, $80.34, almost exactly what you are. City of Brentwood, $98.58. So that's about 20% higher. Oakley, sewer is provided by a Delta Diablo, but water from the city, $102.05. Livermore, $104.42. City of Pittsburgh, California, that is, $105.15. So
can we get copies of that, Rick? Distribute. Thank you. Because I'm trying to scribble these down, and I'm thinking, why am I doing this when you've got about a piece of paper?
I can be happy. So that's water and sewer. So you're really looking, quite well, and what really
the components of that is really have very low water rates, even after these 24 and 25% increases. Your water rates are half what I pay. I live in the city of San Jose, sewer rates are on the higher side, but I just did a study approved last month of the sanitation agency that's about five times as big as you are. They're 55 bill, almost virtually the same sewer rates that you folks have. So, given the size of your agency, it's remarkable.
All right, thank you very much.
We're up. Well, 7. Where we stand right now, if we're not planning on more building in this town, we don't really need a well 7 at this point, do we?
Let me go back a little bit. One of the things that I asked Gary to do and that I have in the budget that's coming before the board next Wednesday evening is to not include any project that is future development related. They are only capacity improvement related projects. We met with the water consultant late last week, and it was their recommendation that we move forward with well number 7 from a current capacity need. The reason he gave was the current maximum daily demand is about 5,700 gallons per minute. And our wells produce about 7,300 gallons per minute, which is great. But with the single highest well being out of service is what the Department of Health requires take that into consideration. We are now approximately 200 gallons per minute short of our stated requirement. So we did include well 7. It's broken out over the first and second year, but what you don't see is the third year, which is a much more significant hit to that. It's about a $2 million project, and you're right, for the first 2 years, you're seeing about $600,000. The total number is certainly going to be much higher than that, closer to $2 million. So that came about late last week, Director Simon, and so that's why it was included in here at the last minute.
So that's my concern at this point. You bring the residents of Discovery Bay to the largest increase I've ever seen in their life, and I grant you we need an increase. You've got 600 some grand here. You've got a meter trailer for 20 grand. You've got 110 grand in a carport. You've got new vehicles for 60,000 over the next year. And I'm thinking to myself, I would rather see this rate increase come a little more gradual than what we're looking at. And we don't need to build a $2 million well at this point.
I'm missing the new vehicles. I'm sorry.
You've got facility and vehicle replacement, 40,000 to 20,000 down the bottom of page 2.
The infrastructure replacement fund?
Yeah.
The infrastructure replacement fund is not to purchase new equipment or install new facilities. That came about as a recommendation, if you recall, from the budget review committee. One of the things we discussed, and one of the, I think, that's important to the long-term financial sustainability of any organization is to maintain a infrastructure replacement fund. The district has never had one before. I'm recommending a replacement fund this year of $384,000. That's not to purchase equipment and vehicles and things like that, Director Simon. That's more for to hold off so that when we do need to replace a building, we do need to replace vehicles, we have a place to pull from, and the money is there to do so. So you're not hitting operating and maintenance every year for those sorts of things. We should be funding those sorts of things out of long-term reserve funds, and that's what that's for.
Well, if you look on the CIP replacement on sewer and water, you've got 446,000 on one side and 3-something on the other. You have over 700,000 replacement.
That's correct, and that's actually a relatively small amount when you consider we're including $150,000 to start out with in the sewer infrastructure replacement fund. When you look at the two projects we've done over the past 2 years, the Cherry Hills project and the Discovery Point project, both of those exceed those numbers. And those are two relatively small projects. The water infrastructure replacement fund, we're looking at more than likely replacing the water infrastructure out on Beaver within within the next couple of years. And this is in my estimation, a prudent method of being able to build up a reserve so we can do that, so we don't have to come back every year and dip into reserves or to add it to a capital. We'll have the money sitting in an account ready to do that type of work.
Can I interrupt, Director Simon and staff? At this point, I'd like to, while Gary's standing up here, rather than us having to get into that yet, I'd like to ask if there's any questions from the audience with regards to the report that you can direct to Gary at this point and try to get some. Yes, Jeff.
Come
on up to the mic, will you, please? So everybody gets the benefit of it.
I have three questions. I just want to make sure I heard you correctly. On residential water usage from last year to this year, you said in the 5,000 to 10,000 square foot lot size that the water use decreased by 8%.
That's about right.
And metered use decreased by 6%.
No, it actually decreased.
Decreased. Yeah,
decreased.
So that by 6, and the lot by 8%. So the non-metered users in that largest block of homes decreased by a greater percentage than the metered users. Am I understanding that correctly?
Slightly.
Yeah,
slightly.
Okay. Yeah, so. Which is counterintuitive to what you hear about meters causing more conservation.
Yes. But the metered usage is less than the non-metered usage.
Next question. I saw you said 17% increase bottom line over 2 years. Is that right?
That's correct.
But when I add up the numbers, maybe I'm not following you how you did your calculation. For metered users, sequentially, so if you take what you're paying today and what you'll be paying 2 years from now, I come up with about, about a 40% increase. 2 years from now, you'll be paying 40% more than you'll be paying today. Is that right?
You're talking about the total for water,
yes,
sir?
Yeah. Where you had, if you're paying $775 today, and you're paying $1,083 2 years from now, you're paying roughly 40% more than you are today.
That's pretty close, yeah. Actually, okay. Just calculated 38.6%.
All right, right.
All overall, for water and sewer,
yeah. Yeah. So how does that equate to your 2-year rate program? What's the 17.7%?
Okay, you have a 22% increase in the first year, you have a 13% increase in the second year. You've got 39%, almost a 39% increase over 2 years.
Right.
You take the square root.
2 years average. Yeah. Okay. Average. Yeah. All right.
So it's not an average of the two. You only add them together.
So my comment. I understand. So my comment would be when I'm not saying anything about the numbers, but when you're explaining this, folks have to realize they're going to be paying 40% more 2 years from now. And that's a number that's pretty significant. Okay. My last question goes to minimum charges or taking the entire fixed amount that the district uses and then allocating that to everybody and then a variable amount on top of that. I assume you have customers that do both of those scenarios.
Are you talking about water rates?
Water and sewer. So, you know, I guess you could do it separately or together, but I'm talking in general. There are customers who have minimum charges. Right. So if somebody doesn't happen to use any water this month, they still get a minimum charge.
Yeah.
And that's legal under the Prop 218.
Minimum charges are kind of a questionable item because you have people not using under the minimum or charged the minimum. They're actually charged more than their proportion of use of the system.
And what
but,
about?
But I have. I mean, but what you're doing is that's why you have an account charge. So everybody pays that account charge, no matter what. What, you have zero usage to start off with that account charge. So you have basically a fixed charge and then a usage charge on top of that. But some of the old style rate making was they have, you know, let's bill everybody for a minimum amount of usage. But that's kind of
in that first scenario you just said that what did you call it?
An account charge.
Account charge. Uh-huh. Could that account charge include all the fixed cost for, you know, water or sewer or both?
If it included all the fixed charge for water and sewer, then everybody would be paying exactly the same thing because almost all the costs are fixed. I mean, you would have a...
They could do that legally.
Not really, because it's not proportioned to your usage of the system. You'd have customers using twice as much water being the same billed as the same amount as a small user would be billed the same
your,
as a
your large account user. Charge could be larger or could be smaller based on decisions that were made. Or is it an absolute formula that says that's all it your
well,
account charge?
The account charge recovers costs that are independent of water cup usage. Fire protection is independent of usage because basically you have 20% of your fixed costs of your operation maintenance and your capital costs go into fire protection. Those are built into that $4.75 account charge.
And that 20% is a national average or something?
That's an average of American Water Works Association. Has a table that for a system of this size says that approximately 20% of your costs should be allocated to fire
protection. Based on having pressure so the hydrants work?
Right, yeah. It's based on developing all the facilities, the design of the water system, so that you do have fire protection.
Thank you, Jeff.
Gary, real quick, I just want to, since these are recorded, I want to make it clear and get your opinion on this. When you look at the data, you can only see a decrease. There's no way for you to be able to quantify why that is. You just see the number drop. So.
Oh, you mean truck usage?
Yeah.
Yes. I look at the data. I see a decrease. Yeah. I look at total water production. How much water you produce?
Mm-hmm.
I look at how much is coming into the treatment plant. That's what. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for clearing that up.
Any other questions for Gary from the public?
Hey, Dave. Good evening. I'm David Lennon, Pop Land Development Company. Can you explain a vacant parcel charge?
There is a parcel charge is $400 per year. That has not changed. It's been in place for many years now. And parcels that have water and sewer services, we've made no change in that. So the development of that charge predates me.
One other observation. I'm not clear. I haven't done it for myself, but the relative cost of metered customers, whether and you've convinced yourself that they're fairly aligned. That the residential customers use meters paying about the same amount as the unmetered. Customer.
Well, they're paying the exact same amount per 100 cubic feet.
They would pay the same amount per year if they used 1,800 cubic feet per.
Well, yeah, with one slight difference here. If both unmetered and unmetered use 18 CCF per month on the average, the metered customers would pay a little bit more because they would pay for that meter billing charge. And the maintenance charge, yeah. So they would pay slightly more. So the on-meter customers don't pay that. So there would be a little bit more for meter because they have a meter and you have to build it.
And just another observation, I don't know where to go with this yet. I'm looking at an agenda item G1, option 1, existing rate structure. I'm looking at the metered use charges at the bottom of that table. And the present metered use charge is 80.803. And then for fiscal year 11-12 goes up to $1.093 and then up to $1.399. That's a 36% increase, a 27% increase the second time overall, a 74% increase. So it seems as though, again, I worked this out, I haven't studied these numbers, that's a pretty heavy thing for the metered users.
That is, and the reason for that is that we're seeing the water use drop. What we're seeing, it's a unit cost, so you have dollars divided by usage. What you're seeing here is the dollar is going up, usage going down, so that unit cost on the water side goes up.
But the thing is, all those customers should pay that same rate. That same rate. You know, all the customers, instead of paying 80 cents, would go to $1 and then $1.39. So all your customers, including the on-meter customers.
Dan's doing over there.
Penalty of additional uses rate. This is going to be especially pertinent to landscape industry.
Right, this it's quite a bit.
Landscape industry.
That's right, because almost all their bill is made up of usage charge, as opposed to a metered residential customer that they have that meter that account charge in there for fire protection. So their consumption charge is only part of their bill, whether it's landscape charge. It's virtually the cost will go up the same with the usage charge.
Any other questions for Gary? Anything you want to add or clarify or anything at this point, Gary?
I would only like to say that these costs are proposed meet the Proposition 219 requirements, because whether you're metered or unmetered, whoever you are, everybody is paying the same unit cost. I just want to clarify that. That's that whether you're a landscaper, whether you're whatever, a homeowner, kind of, you're all paying the same unit cost.
Okay, so, I think we actually did have another question.
Yeah, actually it wasn't for him, it was just...
Come up on up to the...
Galen Ziegler.
Hey, Galen, how you been?
I happen to be in the Budget Review Committee. What Gary is forced to do here this time is use budget numbers that you haven't approved, that you haven't even, I guess you've seen them, but it includes things like this big reserve amount that never was in the budget before. It includes things like a carport, which we haven't approved. So, you know, it's a little bit of, to me,
it's
all
a cart
this
and horse
discussion
thing.
Is, yeah, he's got to be forced to use, I guess it was probably our first cut budget.
Yeah.
Second cut budget?
Or the first cut budget? A lot later.
Okay.
He used the proposed budget that the budget committee came up with.
Well, yeah. No comment on that.
The Galen is accurate. When the budget committee finalized their information and reviewed their budgets and moved them forward to the board, you know, it's a moving target. It's a fluid process. We were at the end of the fiscal year and things changed. And things need to be added and subtracted.
Right.
But the basic components of that budget are still in place.
I was doing those mental calisthenics with you at the beginning of his presentation, thinking, well, how's this in the, what's coming first? But it is fluid, and it's going to have to all come together. It all gels at the same time is the way it works. Brian, did you have something?
No, I was just going to say that I think it's important that we all know that, Gary, I mean, if we cut $100,000 out of capital improvement budget, say we take the carport out,
right,
you shoot you an email and you send us back, you know, that it's what, 2% or?
$110,000 would reduce the overall increase by about 2.3%.
Thank you.
If I may make a comment that I heard about the budgeting versus the rate making, this is very typical because what happens with Proposition 218, another requirement, is you have to send out notices 45 days in advance of a public hearing. So Proposition 218 has advanced the rate-making process, and I am quite often working with budgets in February from other agencies that the final budget is a little bit different. It's just the time frame is just accelerated.
Okay, thank you. You're hanging around?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. Thanks, Gary. Staff?
Yes, what I would like for the board to consider this evening is the rates as proposed by Gary Hornberger in the presentation he gave you, but also knowing that there are, and the board did receive a draft budget last week as part of their budget package, and did receive a presentation from you with respect to that. And so this, with very, very minor exceptions, it changed minimally over last week, but it's basically the same budget. The fiscal 11-12 budget numbers, while some of the parts may have moved and they may have jumped around a little bit, the bottom numbers stayed exactly the same. I wanted to make sure that that stayed in place so that there was no confusion there. But with respect to the operating budget, it is as it is, and certainly the board has jurisdictional oversight over that, as well as all other parts of the budget. The capital improvement program is broken up into really four different parts. It is the sewer wastewater side. It includes the water side of the house. It includes a small miscellaneous, and it includes the emergence, as I refer to it, as a capital infrastructure replacement fund. So the board does have some leeway in there. I think that there is, there's a sensitivity that in many agencies that you always ask for more and you know you're going to get less. I want you to know that this budget, if you look at what the projected actuals are, it is pretty much spot on. It's not the way I operate in terms of wanting to ask for more and getting less. I feel that can be at times disingenuous, although sometimes it is necessary. I'll use that as a caveat. But with respect to the capital budget, again, the same thing. The capital budget is built upon current needs. It does not presuppose any future development in place. It is based strictly upon current capacity needs, current requests from staff as it relates to operational efficiency and some facility improvements. That's why you have the carport, for example. We have not just the vac truck, which is a fairly expensive vehicle, but we have trailers that have fuel hoses and generators that we want to put away. It's not just for one vehicle. It's for a number of other pieces of equipment, although I am sensitive to the board's position on that particular item. With respect to some of the other items, they are, like I indicated, relative to ongoing maintenance, pump maintenance, things along those lines. So effluent pump stations, making sure that those are online. We've had some transducers for some of the wells that came up, and we want to add those on so that we have an electronic method of monitoring our well status versus having to pull the well offline and dip something down there and see what the elevation is at. So Virgil and I are here this evening to discuss this with you and answer any questions you may have. I just wanted to give you that as a preliminary overview with respect to the overall budget. And Gary's right, this, and Galen's right, it does kind of a little bit of cart before the horse, but sometimes this is what's happened in the past, and it's an unfortunate situation, and they got to get this done before you can really finalize the budget. You got to finalize the budget before you get this done. It's a little bit of a catch-22.
Okay, I have a question for staff. We were given a draft budget last week. We're going to be having a workshop on that next week, I believe. Is that correct?
We will not be having a workshop. We will be having a regular special meeting.
To discuss the budget. With
yes.
That being the only agenda item?
That's correct.
Okay. Does that reflect pretty much what's in Gary's report with regards to increases?
It reflects what is in his report.
Or is the one we're going to...
With the exception of the...
The numbers stayed the same. Okay.
There were
As with regards to increases, it's the same.
Yes.
Okay. Dollar wise. Okay. And that's the budget that the budget committee brought forward. Is that correct?
With certain variations, yes. They did have after the budget committee concluded their work. Like I said, there were some items that needed to be included. There were some things that were dropped off of it.
But the bottom line stayed the same?
I think the bottom line stayed about the same.
Okay.
I don't remember specifically. I could go back and look at the numbers.
Just curious.
It's within a reasonable amount of
money. Okay. And so we're going to have plenty of time to discuss this in depth on next Wednesday. We don't have to go into depth discussion on it today, or do you need some action from us today?
We need some action this evening because we need to post the... We need to post the notice in the newspaper on Friday. But you can always post it, and you can always, you don't have to adopt what the recommendation is.
I'm going to voice my strenuous opposition to this right now. Until this board sits down and discusses this line by line, I'm not voting yes on any of that, because there's been a lot of changes in this budget.
We did this, Rick, we did this last year. If I understand correctly, what we're doing tonight is setting the high limit so we can come back and lower the rate increase. Mm-hmm. We're just going to set, so we have an idea of what that top line limit is, so that we can move forward on the 218.
You have the ability this evening to make reductions to the percentage. You can
But if we have to post something on Friday, we don't post what the increase is going to be on Friday, just that there's going to be a rate change, or do we have to post a number?
You have to advise in the notice what the increase is going to be and the basis for it, so you're going to have everything lined up.
Here we are, 3 days before a deadline, making a decision again. I hate that.
If I may, Director Dawson is correct. You are setting a ceiling, and you're asking for protests, you know, the opportunity for the ratepayers to protest the process in the event they are unsuccessful. Then you have a ceiling, but you can budget, whether it's this next fiscal year or the following fiscal year, anything below it. You're just prohibited from going above that ceiling.
What my fear is, you're going to post a 40% increase. You're going to set the residents in this town.
We're not setting.
No, well, but you
that's
see,
what you're looking at. You're over 2 years of 40%.
But we're only are doing we posting it for 1 year. Percentage or a dollar amount? No. Huge difference. Huge difference. Because when you talk about dollars, this is not an outrageous situation. We're still on the low end of the market in every community around us on a dollar amount. But if you want to talk about percentages, yeah, then all the scare factors go out there because it sounds huge. The problem is the board that was here before I sat on it never gave any increases, and here we are having to make the decisions that the boards didn't do for the last 10 years.
Are you raising your voice for a reason?
Emphasis.
Didn't have much emphasis to it. You didn't sit on this board, so I wouldn't comment on it because you have no idea what went on.
I know they didn't increase. That's all I'm saying.
You needed to be here to find out why they didn't increase.
I was here, and there was 1 year where the rate increase was, what, 1 point something? And the whole audience was asking, you know.
Whatever that could be done without putting it out to the public is what was given as an increase.
100%.
The past 2 years' increases were 9% for the current fiscal year and 3% for the prior year. With respect to the question for 1 year or 2 year, Hornberger did a 2 year rate study. The reason why I recommended a 2 year rate study is because we still have the water and wastewater master plans on the horizon. And those are currently, as you know, going through the review process. Once those master plans are in a final draft format, which I expect to have the water one probably in the next couple of weeks, Virgil. In the wastewater one, once we're doing a two-week analysis of some of the situations over at the testing at the wastewater plant, that's going to trail by probably 30 days or so. But once those are done and we have the opportunity for the board to weigh in on those, it was my thought if we adopted the two-year budget or the two-year rate study, which would include the current year and the next year, without any discussion relative to any new development or any impact on new development, that this is what it costs to run the business of the district. This is the number that it is. Yeah, there's some discretion in there. The board can reduce and cut some things, but the bottom line is it's $100,000 is $300. You cut 100. About 2% per 100,000?
2% per 100,000. 2.1% per 100,000.
So you're looking at, let's say you cut 300,000, you're cutting 6%. Gary and I were on the phone discussing this the other day, and he was asking me if I had an extra $1,000 in the operating budget on the O&M side. And I really had a hard time just finding $1,000. It's that tight of an operating budget. I mean, it's really a tight, there's a little bit of flexibility in the capital because there's things in there that the board can make the decision to move forward with or not. Do you want to have the, do you want to build the carport? Do you want to have the additional fuel trailer? They all bring positives and they all bring their cost items. They bring efficiencies to staff and for the operational efficiency of the organization. But in the long run, it's up, it's ultimately up to the board to make the call as to what is included in the budget or not.
And I just want to draw an analogy here. We are in crisis status on our fire district right now because that board came on board a year and a half ago and didn't address its revenue problem, and it spent out of its reserves, and then it didn't get the engineering report it needed to be able to go for a revenue enhancement, and now it's going to spend the rest of its reserves, and it's looking at bankruptcy within 12 months.
No.
What?
They can't go bankrupt.
Thanks, Brian. My point is, it can shut down. They don't have to give us fire service out
here.
There's no law that says they have to give us fire service.
But they have the revenue to have four stations.
Okay. We're talking about Crisis Center here in Discovery Bay. I don't really want to argue about it. That's not what we're talking about. The point is, they didn't address the revenue problem. They didn't look at it realistically, and they didn't start generating the revenue early enough in the process to sustain itself, and now they're at crisis status. And so I don't want to see that happen out here. Yeah, we have some reserves, but if we're not going to have enough revenue to pay the operating costs, then we're going to be spending those reserves.
If I might add, we did a 5-year rate study, I believe, 2 years ago, Gary, and that rate study recommended somewhere in the 14%.
15,
16. Per year for
per
5
year
years.
For that.
You know, I just going back a little bit of history, I think we've actually moderated those numbers with this budget. So I think that budget is actually, those numbers will have even been moderated with this budget, with these proposed rate increases, had they been adopted.
Go ahead.
I'd like to start out and voice my support of the infrastructure replacement fund. I think that for what we do, which is hitting a moving target, I think putting away some money every year for those kinds of maintenance issues, Cherry Hills, whatever pops up next week, is very smart. You know, I know that number that we're looking at sounds, you know, it. That 20%, 22%, whatever it may be, but it's important that, for me at least, in this decision-making process, that there are certain times we can't make the popular decision. We have to make the right decision, and I think Kevin hit on it. If we don't have the money to operate, we're just going to eat through those reserves, and we, you know, if you look at the actual increase per year for the residents, even in this first year, which was 22%,
yes,
is 177 dollars, which, you know, isn't, you know, great and everything, but it's not, it doesn't equal what it sounds like when you say 20%.
Okay,
can I make one more comment with respect to the infrastructure replacement fund? Those items were initially included in the budget, in the capital budget, and after some discussion with the budget review committee, it was suggested that instead of leaving them there as an annual, remember we talked about an annual project, that we would set them up as a replacement fund that we would contribute to annually instead of just rebudgeting the same dollar amount every year. And at the end of the day, 10 years from now, we only have $150,000 instead of maybe $10 billion that could finance a lot of underground infrastructure problems if we had them.
We're really having this discussion about what it costs to put a carport on, right? Because really, I only see about $160,000 in replacement costs here. Well, I'm looking at 50. Facilities and vehicle replacement is $80,000 over 2 years. And on the other side, it's another $60,000. Yeah. Am I missing something?
It's on page 2 and 3.
That's 90 and 60 is 150. So, well, I'm looking at the line that says facilities and vehicle replacement. Isn't that the?
I'm looking at the total. That was just one of.
You're looking at one side. There's a water and sewer combined. You need to add it.
You got 158, 180, 226, and 220. Mm-hmm. You add those together.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. I got you. You're right.
Seven, almost 800 grand. I think the thing for me, I agree with you, Brian, 100%. Is there an increase needed? Absolutely. But before I stick a 40% increase on somebody, and we're leaving out the most important part of this, the start of well 7, this is the thing that's probably bothering me the worst, that 576 grand, that's next year. It's 2.something million the year after that when we build it. That's another, along with whatever the normal increase we're going to have to get the residents, that one comes right along with it. On top of
it's the total project is about 2, so it'd be about another 1.5.
Well, we did the last one. By the time we get done, it'll be 2-something again. So let's say it's 2 million. I'm just looking at minimizing the increase. I know there's got to be an increase. It's probably going to be 30%. It may be 40.
Are you suggesting we don't need well 7?
If we don't need well 7, it can wait. Then I would wait on it.
That's a big if, though, Mark.
Well, at this point, we honestly don't need it.
At this point, we absolutely do need it according to the state regulations.
Not according to what Rick told me.
After we met this past week with the water consultant from Ludup and Skelmanine, we are short to meet our maximum daily demand with our heaviest producing well out of service. And that's a Title 22 federal requirement. We are short on demand. They recalculated it, and I wish you could have been here tonight to answer the questions.
Well,
but I was questionable. I questioned him because I got that email from him late Thursday evening. And I said, you know, you're telling us we don't need it, but now all of a sudden we do need it. And I wanted to make sure. And so he explained it to me that some of the wells do not produce to the volume that they used to. So they're not as efficient as they were when the original assumptions were made. They reran all the numbers. And with the current capacity needs, we are 200 gallons per minute a day short. And I know it's not a lot. We're really on the bubble. And in the report, it says we are marginal at best with our current existing system.
In front of the meeting that we had with him, he told us that we were short. When I was sitting at the table.
The term he used was marginal at best.
And he's on the safe side. So what I'm saying is you brought up the fact that we're in crisis mode. And we are in crisis mode. So whatever we can cut out of this, I want to cut out of it before I pass on the largest raised rate that we've ever passed on, followed by another huge one in 2 years, because that's what's coming.
Director, so I'd like to just correct it. It's not that he's being conservative, it's that he's following Title 22 of the federal rates. And so he's using that structure and that information and the calculations determine where we stand. And the calculations show that we're 200 gallons per minute short.
I think that well 7, though it might not be something we want to do, is obviously a necessity. I mean, if we're already low with our biggest producer down, I mean, you could take into a million things could happen, and we have to be in a position to serve water to this district.
Again, those will be things that we can really address next Wednesday on a per item basis. We're not committing to that tonight one way or the other.
And I might add,
and it probably would be better to have a full board here for that discussion also.
And I might add that with respect to well 7, you know, that's going to become a discussion item of the board, of the full board, once the master plan is done. We're only allocating $40,000 to it this year, but that's just for preliminary environmental work, some site locating, some siting, and possible some test drills. You know, we have a whole year before that number really hits the 575. And you can come back next year. Let's say you adopt, let's just say for round numbers, you adopt 20% this year. Let's just say it's that number. And next year you adopt the 13%. Well, maybe you drop off well 7. Maybe you add something else to it. So that number, you can always go below what you've adopted on the rate study. You just can't exceed it.
Okay. I think, do you want anything you want to add, Mark? I think we've probably beat this horse. It's not going to get out of the gate even. So what's, do I have a, we need a motion to move forward with a recommendation to the staff to put out a, I'm stumbling along. Help me out here, counsel.
Just have a motion to approve the recommendation.
Well, we need to decide on option one or two, right?
No.
True. Correct.
Okay, so the first motion is what option to take. I'm confused as to why option one or two affects the meter grades, because none of the associations have meters. So why does option one or two affect the meter grades? Sure, Gary, that's what I really was looking to you. Thanks.
It affects the metered rates because it affects, in fact, everybody's usage rate.
It has to be equal. Now I know why.
Everybody's usage rate, a little less usage, the rate goes up.
I'm with you. I'm sorry. Sure. I did know the answer to that question. Okay, so I think we need to discuss first whether we're going to look at option one or option two. Option one, I shouldn't say what option one is, because I probably will say it in a way that's, I'll state it the way it's the facts, but I'd rather somebody else say. We all know what option one is. Is everybody clear on what option one and option two are?
No.
Option
okay.
one.
Option
is,
one is having is where the multiple dwellings actually pay for the water that they use, as opposed to paying subsidizing the larger water users.
Actually, it's the other way around. Option one is the existing current rate structure.
Okay. Option
existing
two,
tier rate structure. Option two
levels the playing field.
Yeah. Well, it creates another tier for more condominiums. Yes.
And how do we decide on which developments fall into one and fall into two?
It would depend upon whether or not there is landscaping associated with any landscaping whatsoever associated with the residential unit.
And I have to tell you what those numbers
for Mark, for a condominium unit, not for a single family resident.
And at best, it's going to be 174, correct, Gary?
No.
154.
174.
174 at the most, 122 at the least, because I just know those numbers. So apparently there's 54 units over here at San Bayon. So I'd entertain a motion on that. So we can determine, or how do we have an option. So obviously if one doesn't pass, the other one goes, and I guess.
No, you're gonna need an affirmative vote on one. You could have a negative vote on both.
Is there a motion with regards to options? I don't have any pull. I pull it, but I don't have any.
I'm not the only thing that bothers me, I know how you feel, and I understand that we have to do something about the
impropriety.
The only thing that bothers me is to make things just for how many people?
Yeah.
174? We actually charge everybody else a little bit more. That's the only thing that kind of bothers me about it.
It's not the charging them more. It's an equality based, it's an equal based system. It's not that you're penalizing one. It has to do with one is actually using less water.
I'm looking at this though. Before you throw me under the bus, okay. On option one, under 5,000 is, well, we'll say 5,000 to 10,000 is 29.90. On option two, 5,000 to 10,000 is 30.15. So there is a slight increase there, is there not?
But otherwise, you're asking 122 homeowners to subsidize 6,000 other homeowners.
What do you mean they're subsidized?
Because we're paying it. Those homeowners are paying it in. those homeowners would be paying an unequal share. They'd be paying for water they're not using to subsidize the larger amount. And you're talking about a penny.
I think Gary can probably explain it better than I certainly can.
Again, everybody is paying under the option two. Under option one, everybody pays $1.09. Under option two, everybody pays $1.10. It's about a penny more per 100 cubic feet.
Okay.
And the reason for that is, it's again, same dollars divided by usage.
usage is going down under option number two, so the rate goes up. But again, everybody pays for the same amount. It's just that under option two, even the unmetered irrigation use customers, they're paying $1.10 also. It's just that they're paying $1.10 times 9.75.
Thank you, Mary. Thank you. Chris, I heard you.
I'll make a motion how should I phrase this?
Adopt option one or option
okay,
two?
That's all? Okay, I make a motion to adopt option two as our option.
Is there a second on that motion? Okay. Motion dies. Are there any other motions? Okay, what do we do now, Council? There's no motions.
I would recommend discussion amongst the board to give direction to staff as what it wants to do.
Okay, so by nobody making a motion or approving a motion
or
seconding a motion, what we've in effect have done is stop the ability to have a rate increase for our water for this year. Is that what the board wants to do?
No.
Okay. So, what would the board like to direct staff to do?
I'm at a loss. I made a motion. There was no second. So, with two options, there's only one or the other. So, whoever didn't second my motion should thus make a motion for the other one, right? Or am I wrong?
Motion still on the floor? Is the first motion still on the floor?
It died, but it can be remade if somebody wants to make
a motion.
I make a motion to accept option two.
I second that motion. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
How many ayes did I get?
Three. Oh, sorry.
Aye. Oh, really? Mark? Okay, so it's unanimous? We got four ayes? Any nays? Okay,
right.
I don't know. I'm sorry about that, guys. I missed the point there. So now we know what motion we're going to, what option we're going to vote on. That was really
good
bad.
Job.
So we're only looking at option two, board, and we're looking at making council.
At this point in time, you may want to consider a motion to approve the staff recommendation as contained in the report. Using option number two.
What can I say where I don't have to say the whole
so
thing?
Moved.
So moved. Thank you.
I will second that motion. Is there any discussion? Well, I'm not going to.
Proud of you. I'm going to do around here.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion carries. Would you like to be listed as an abstention?
Yeah.
And we have three aye votes and one abstention for the both Director Simon abstained. Please indicate that. That would be appropriate, Council?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
The motion still carries with three positive.
Understood. No, understood. Okay. Are we done with item G1? Okay, good. Item G2.
Thank you, board, on that last item. This next item is to award the contract for the Cornell Park renovation play area to James Brenneman. Farron is here and can give the report if she wishes, or I can continue with it. It's up to you. Okay, she's got it.
This is just for the phase one of the Cornell Park play renovation. It includes most of the site work, protection removals, earthwork, drainage, The curb and pedestrian concrete and seat wall does not include the play surfacing or the structure installation, which will come before you at a later date. There were 8 responsive bidders. All of them had complete packages. The low bid was James Brenneman for a total bid amount of $58,600. You have some tables in there if you want to look at the bid comparisons. We have worked with him in the past and had successful worked with him on the Ravenswood Splash Pad, and we also found all his bid package and license status to be satisfactory at this time as well.
Thank you. Farron, do you have anything you want to add to that? Okay. Any discussion questions by the board? Any questions, discussion by the public? All those in favor?
No.
Can someone make a motion?
I'll make a motion to accept the bid and work and award construction contract in the amount of, do you want that exact amount or should I go to 60?
That's on him.
Huh?
He gave us a sit.
Okay.
Oh, were we expecting any ads? Do we have to put anything for any ads?
Okay.
That's a fixed amount, but I do have the authority to make change orders above that, mm-hmm. so long as they're within my authority limits.
Okay. I just want to make sure.
Yeah.
Accept bid and award construction contract in the amount of $58,600 to James Brenneman and authorize the president of the board to execute. Do you want president of the board or? President of the board to execute necessary contract documents.
I'll second it.
Motion's been made and seconded. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you,
Farron.
Farron. Hey, Farron. I know that I see how you came up with your list here. This is office. You do it by when they came in?
Yes.
Would it affect anything for you if you listed them in the order of amount as opposed to the time they came in? Is there a reason why that you don't want to do it
because
that way?
Because there's a bidders the bidders list that we use matches that list. The bidders list also, when they submit RFIs and I respond to them, I use their bidder number and not their name.
Okay, that's fine. Leave it the way it is. Just don't announce.
Are they local contractors, or where are all these guys been from Contra Costa County, or where are these guys from?
I don't know all of them, but the one that is awarding is out of Walnut Creek, so yes, it's local.
Okay, thank you, Farron, for hanging around. Good to see you. Item 3.
Item 3 is being brought to you this evening. As you're aware, the regional board had submitted to us a letter indicating that we would be fined for 5 excursions of our total coliform on 5 different occasions. Those 5 different occasions took place in January on the 19th, 21st, 24th, 25th, and 26th. Those coincide with the startup of the new Trojan 3000 Plus UV system. When we received the letter, I discussed this with Doug Little with Violi and suggested that we obviously fight the letter, but send in a letter suggesting that the 5 different occasions be considered one upset because it was taking place with the startup of the UV system. We received a letter back a couple of weeks ago indicating that the regional board did not feel that that was the case. And so they submitted their letters suggesting that we execute the agreement where we agreed to paying 5 mandatory minimum penalties, which is $3,000 each for $15,000, or we can continue on to appeal the process, which would take place later. I thought it would be prudent, just due to the overall cost, it's $15,000, while it's a big number, the cost to appeal it could be more, and then we also open ourselves up to other civil lawsuits that might come as a result. So by this action, we remove that possibility. It's important to note that MMPs are also quantified by the board or defined by the board as minimal violations, I think, or non-serious violations. So what I'm asking for tonight is board authorization to pay the 5 fines and $30,000, total $15,000.
Go ahead, Mark.
Now that the system is up and running correctly and there's no reason for it to generate fines at this point, what liability does Veolia stand at this point going forward?
Well, you know, it's a good question. While the system is up and running, there still may be occasions when fines do occur, when we do exceed, just based upon the biological makeup of the system at that point in time. Depending on what caused the fine, whether it was as a result of work that they did or a result of our equipment, there could be some culpability on both parties.
Is there anything under contract that covers that?
Yes.
Question? Chris?
Yeah, right. So this comes down to quality again. So I just want to emphasize that we keep working on our quality systems, and we're doing that. But I would say we need to get, you know, Veolia involved on this cost.
Staff, you want to address
on
that?
On this cause or on this cost?
The cost.
It wasn't in the contract.
It wasn't in the contract.
That was a prior contract.
Okay.
I didn't realize that.
And it was associated with the startup of a project that we managed and they supported us on. If it was solely their project, the situation might be different. Okay. That wasn't.
Pretty hard to assign liability, is what you're saying.
All right.
Okay.
How would you want to work this motion?
I think the step, the recommended action is.
It will.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Appropriate.
If I'm reading this correctly, then I move that we authorize.
It's just a point of order. You do need to open it up to
right.
Public comment.
Sorry about that. I forgot about that.
Any discussion from the public? Comments? Okay.
Wait, I forgot what I was saying.
Go to G.
I make a motion that we authorize.
Just adopt staff recommendation.
Adopt staff recommendation to pay $15,000 fine, not to exceed $15,000.
I'll second that.
Motion has been made and seconded. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Okay. Item four.
The next item, Virgil, is want to come up and discuss a little, explain the process. Currently we have what are referred to as two ITT flight pumps. They're manufactured, I believe, in Scandinavia, I think Sweden. And two of them require maintenance. And so what we'd like to do is remove them both, fix them both, but also add in a new Avon pump, which is a chopper pump. Virgil can explain that a little bit more than I can.
In your wastewater plant, you have your influent pump station. This is where all the raw sewage from all of Discovery Bay comes into. And that's, as you well know or may not know, that's around 2 to 3 million gallons a day that comes in. Over the past 7 to 8 years, baby wipes, bounty towels, they're tougher to tear up or dissolve. Like tissue, they don't dissolve like the tissue does. So it's causing pump manufacturers big problems. So the influent pump station, what we do is you suck those up through it and you send it to the headworks. It jams up in the headworks and further downstream, the rags do. Sometimes they curl up together like a ball of hair and just can run long train, all of a sudden you've got a big jam. In this particular pump station, we have five pumps in them. Our draft water, wastewater master plan suggests we either put something in front of this influent pump station that removes the rags, or maybe consider modifying those pumps to a chopper pump. What it does is it will chop those rags up to generally about a half inch pieces. And so because we have two pumps that out of the five that have been pulled need to be repaired, we'd like to replace one of them with the chopper pump. Eventually, over the next few years, replace all the other four with chopper pumps so it alleviates the rag issue.
Okay. I noticed that we got a bid for 10.
Today, if you, let me just back up. It's rare to have two of them down at one time like we do out of the five. And if one more went down, we'd be hurting. So we don't have a spare to put in there.
You got a quote for a 20 horse and a 30 horse. Why is
anyway,
30 horse?
The five pumps that are in there, two of them are 20. I'm sorry, three are 20 and two are 30.
So you're replacing one of the 30s right now?
One of the 30s now, that's okay. Correct.
All right. Any questions from the board? Any questions or clarification from the public? Thank you, Virgil. Is there a motion?
Yeah, I'll make a motion. To approve the purchase of one 30 horse on chopper pump, Wastemaster treatment plant one affluent station pump, and not to exceed, what is that?
17.
I was 19.
It's 19,650, that includes tax.
Not to exclude, not to
exceed
$20,000.
May I suggest we wait until Director Dawson returns and step to the restroom?
If he never comes back. I stuck up for you.
What? I had to go.
A motion was made.
To approve the purchase not to exceed $20,000 for the Vaughn chopper pump.
Aye.
No, we need a second.
Oh, I'll second that.
Okay. The motion has been made and seconded. Any more discussion? Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Virgil.
Thanks, Virgil.
And item five.
Thank you. This item is something that has been discussed and was actually in the current year operating budget. It was approved by the board last June. Was to outsource our water billing process here at the district. You know, we do about 1,900 water bills a month. We're probably going to be adding 300 to 400 of those within the next few months as we bring the large users online with our Casell system. So instead of billing them quarterly, we'll be billing them monthly and integrate them into that system. So we'll be increasing those numbers. Currently, our front office person, Joey, who you all know, prints all the bills, stuffs them into envelopes, seals them, inserts them, and gets them to the post office. It's about an hour per 100 to do that process based upon the information that she's tracked and what she does. Mm-hmm. And I actually questioned that number, so I went online and wanted to know what the metric was on that, and it was actually pretty darn close. So, what you have, and one of the other things I looked at doing was, because I wasn't sure that was the right way to go, was we also looked at a folder inserter machine that could, about the size of a copier, a larger copier, that could be here in the office, and that once the invoices are printed, they would be just run through a machine, they'd be folded and inserted, and ready for postage, but then they'd be sent to the postage meter. What this does is it eliminates our cost in postage, which is about $10,000 of its actual cost. Our postage cost is about $10,000 a year to mail those. So it's really not that much. It's a couple thousand dollars more. The cost per unit is 54.555 cents per unit to mail them out with return address envelopes, the service and the postage. We did check the references. We did an RFP, went out, we had three responses. The company called Freedom Mailing submitted what we felt to be the best of the three, and we recommend approving them. We did do their reference checks. They came back exceptional. There was not one reference check that we did. It was the least bit questionable. And in the back, there are some samples of what some of the bills might look like.
I was going to ask you, are these their bills?
These are their bills. Okay. These are samples of their bills. We have not identified what ours will look like, but they will have the monthly usage, the annual usage chart like you see on some of them. So they will be in there. It's just going to make it a much more efficient operation for us.
Did you have something left? Did you get the panel on the button?
My only question is I have no problem doing this because I've seen Joey. doing this. My question is what are we going to have her do with all that free time?
There's a lot of things that don't get done. It's the problem. If you go back into that office in the right hand corner, there's a lot of boxes with work that just needs to get caught up on.
How will this deal with delinquent billing?
The Cassell system actually triggers delinquent billings, and so what we will be able to do is to send out a separate, like a red bill. It'll be a delinquent type bill, but it integrates it seamlessly.
But we'll still have to keep track of who pays and who doesn't.
We do that. We would be doing that anyway. Yes. Because the bills still come back to us, whether they pay online, whether they pay by check, or they come in and pay by credit card or by check. We still have to manually put that information in. If it goes through credit card, it gets dropped right into our system. But the bills are still, the checks are still going to come to us, and we still have to manually put those in.
So Joey will still have to spend quite a bit of time reconciling who paid, who didn't, and who's late.
That's correct. That part of the system won't be automated.
Just for clarification purposes, according to what I'm hearing you say, for $2,450 a year, they're going to do this because approximately $10,000 is posted. Is that correct? I don't need the exact, simple yes or no is fine, Rick. I trust
the answer.
You.
The answer is within that.
There is absolutely no way at whatever, even if we're getting a great copier rate, that we're paying at least 4 to 5 cents a copy. And now you're talking, Joey's spending more than 6 cents a copy to do it. This is a no-brainer as far as I'm concerned.
Now, right now, we're estimated to spend right around $9,500 for this year in postage. So it's a ballpark
it's a no-brainer. It's 10 cents a unit.
99% of our postage is, 99% of our postage is water-related.
All right. So is there any discussion from the public on this? Yes, Mr. Barber.
Is it passed through anyway? Don't you bill that? Isn't that a line item on your chart meter? Customers' bills?
Yes. Repeat the question for me, Rick, so just make it.
I didn't hear the question.
Rick,
is this in essence a line item or a pass through? Because don't you have a line item on your metered customers where you charge them metered billing expenses?
Yes, this is just the expense part of that. That would be the revenue part. This would be the expense side of it.
But if your expense goes up, wouldn't you charge them more? That's what you're saying.
I'm saying that our overall expenses are about the same. They stay roughly the same. Because it's not just the postage, it's the cost of the envelopes, it's the cost of the paper.
It's the labor.
It's the labor, it's the cost of the
printer. This actually should save money the way I see it.
Yeah.
In the long run.
Okay, because I saw how much the machine was. They weren't, was it?
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
I'd like to make a motion to authorize the general manager to execute contract documents between the district and Freedom Milling to outsource monthly services for water meter billing in the annual amount of $12,450 effective July 1st, 2011.
I'll second it.
Okay, the motion has been made and seconded. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Hey, a point of order for the board's benefit. It's very simple to say, I would like to make a motion to accept staff's recommendation to item number G4, and then you don't have to read all that because the recommendation is written right here. Is that correct, Council?
Yes, as long as that's what the motion is.
I mean, in this instance, that would have, it just saves us reading the whole thing. You can read it if you want
to.
Okay. Most of the main characters.
I like the way you read it.
Thank you.
Yeah, very good. Dickens is next, I'm sure. Okay, moving along. Chair reports. Mark, do you have anything?
I have no.
It's Chris.
No.
Brian.
I attended the May 19th Byron Union School District meeting. They are instituting a service learning program for graduation of through the middle school. They don't have an exact number yet, but what that means is they're looking at about an hour of service for every semester you're in school. So, you know, every year you're going to have to do 2 hours of community service to graduate from the middle school, which I think is great. They also are revamping their volunteer handbook and discussing their policies around volunteers, which is important. They set the minimum days for 2011-2012, and they set the construction bond for the building they're doing at $2.5 million.
Chris has something.
I just want to remind everyone that the Community Center Committee meeting is going to be on June 7th, which is Tuesday, and that's at 3 o'clock, Rick? 3 to 5? Okay. Thank you.
I would, first of all, like to acknowledge the first task of our intern program. For all you that don't get a book, we have now a little Rosenberg's Rules on a cheat sheet that you noticed the president used meticulously tonight. And I just want to say, you know, this is the first step in hopefully a good summer with our intern program. Secondly, I probably stole your thunder already.
Okay, have at it.
And secondly, I would like to remind the public that this coming Monday is an ECCFPD, it's Contra Costa Fire Protection District meeting. It's important that we be there. I've had numerous discussions with not only the fire chief with regards to what his thoughts are with regards to the impact to Discovery Bay, but as I've also had discussions with the supervisor over procedure, how things can work, what they can do and what they can't do. The gist of it is that they were given authority by the Board of Supervisors to run this district. They haven't done it the way they were directed to, but it's kind of like once you're off of a board, you can't go back and tell that board what to do. Although there are controls over it with regards to other organizations. LAFCO is going to be involved in any decisions with regards to what the possible breakup of the district is because of the impact it will have on the entire district. We don't know where it's going forward from here. I would hope that we would get a good turnout from Discovery Bay just to encourage the board to move forward with a plan. The problem, as I see it, is that they don't have a plan. They didn't sit down and say, this is what we're going to do. They just started throwing darts at the wall. And so, anyway, that meeting's on Monday night. I would encourage attendance. That's all I have at this time. Manager's report. Any reports?
I have two real brief items.
Well,
Does
Virgil, no report from you, Virgil? Okay. Go ahead, Rick.
He was over there. Two real brief items for you tonight. In your packet is the water quality report, copy of that, it's in the back as well. That'll be mailed out here in the next few days. Not sure exactly the mailing date, but it's going out. And the second item is there's to the left of all of you, there's a bunch of notebooks and boxes and briefcases. If those of you who haven't been here, our auditors are in this week, and most of last week, this week, and probably next week as well. So
that's it?
That's it.
Council?
I will not be at next week's or the meeting, your next regular meeting in 2 weeks. I will be on vacation. My colleague Deanne Gillick will be present.
We
here
saw her
my
before,
place.
Correct?
No, you saw
Mia.
My colleague Mia Brown.
Okay.
She filled in on short notice since I didn't know I wasn't going to be able to attend until the afternoon.
Can we allow vacation?
Thank you, guys. Is that your entire report, Council? Is that you're taking a vacation?
Let's just say I have a scheduled meeting overseas.
Well, enjoy.
Aloha.
I'll take care of the scheduled meetings.
Okay. Committee updates. Are there any? Have any committees met since the last meeting? Okay. Correspondence is listed. Public records requests are listed. Future agenda items. Brian.
I would like to discuss the representation from this board to code enforcement meetings. If Ray's not able to attend, maybe one of us, I want to discuss maybe one of us taking it over.
Did he have a conflict for one time or two?
It was an ongoing conflict. It was a scheduling conflict.
Anything from you, Chris?
I believe, do Director Steele is the alternate to that.
Really? I don't remember ever
congratulations.
Acknowledging that. I'll have to check our minutes on that. So.
Ms. McCool will get back to you with that when she looks it up on the chart.
Brian
she'll
Dawson
email you. She'll email all of us and let us know who's the alternate.
Thank you.
Any other agenda items that anybody has? Okay, with that being said, I believe it's time for the gavel. We're adjourned.
Thank you.
Again, I blew your expectations, man.